Greetings. Thanks for joining us for Tributaries. Getting censored these days doesn't mean you're railing against the machine. Medically speaking, you could just be on a more holistic path, which is where today's guest travels. Barbara O'Neill has been silenced in her own native Australia for sharing this holistic message that our body is made to be healthy. She knows how the body works and speaks about it ever so clearly. She'll be in Loveland, Colorado at the Eden Valley Retreat in mid-July for some lectures. It's quite an honor to speak with her today. I'm Robin. Glad you could join us. My first question, actually, is what is your background that led you into such a prolific and practical understanding of the systems of the body?
What really started my journey was I worked as a psychiatric nurse. So I studied anatomy and physiology, and then I had my experiences on the wards, and it shocked me how many retarded children were the result of forceps deliveries. Mm. I also saw in the other wards that people were treated with drugs, they were treated with therapies, but I really didn't see people get better. And then when only a few years later I had my own child and I realised that you can't just let birth happen, you've got to take control. And when my daughter got sick and they wanted to give her so many antibiotics, that really confronted me with, what am I going to do here? And I did not want to do that. So I began to ask old ladies. I was 25. They were 85. So they're past now. And that's where I learned about onion poultices. And I also started to read about the American Red Indians. I had a book by Alf Wilson, who lived with the American Red Indians. And then I was introduced to water therapies, hydrotherapies. And I discovered that 100 years ago, nurses learned this. And about that time, I became a Christian, a Seventh-day Adventist Christian. And other than, of course, I wanted to know God, but I was also attracted because they look at natural remedies rather than drugs. So that all sort of came together about the same time.
Well, you certainly have been doing your homework since, and we're all benefiting from that. I've heard you refer to the liver as the project manager, and since it is, I thought it would be a good topic for today. And actually, if working properly, our body will be able to ward off many of the serious diseases often experienced today. Can you share its basic job as project manager?
Well, as the project manager, and I have sons who are builders who have been project managers, so I compare it to them. If the plumbers come on, they have to go to James. If the plasterers come on, they go to James. He's orchestrating the job site, and that's really what the liver does. Everything that comes into the body goes first to the liver. I call the portal vein the M1 main highway, straight to the project manager, and the liver assesses it. So if it's fairly toxic, it'll often wrap it up in fat and store it. If it's not too toxic and can be broken down to a safer molecular structure and can be easily released out. And also with the food that we eat. The food that we eat goes straight to the project manager, the liver, and the liver determines what happens to the glucose. And the liver is the only organ in the body with fructose receptor sites. So if someone's doing an overload of fructose, lots of fruit juice, lots of cakes and biscuits and breads that have been cooked with high fructose corn syrup, we get an overload of fructose. The liver cannot convert all of that to glucose, which it usually does. So it stores it on the liver in little fat globules. So there's your fatty liver.
Right, yes.
Traditionally, fatty liver has always been fairly common with alcoholics.
Right.
But people who don't drink are coming up with fatty liver.
Do you think then that the overwhelming amount of carbs that we're eating today are the initial cause of decreasing overall liver health?
I certainly think it's a contributing factor. I don't think it's the over factor. So understanding how the liver is the only organ with fructose receptor sites, and also realizing that most of the breads and cakes, donuts that people eat today sweetened with the high fructose corn syrup. I think it's, yes, it might be overload of carbs, but it also could be that the way it is sweetened, it's such a cheap form of sweetening. But the other thing that is contributing to livers not being very happy today is our overexposure to environmental poisons. In fact, I was reading recently that it is estimated we are exposed to about 100,000 new chemicals every year. So this is also a contributing factor because the liver's like a sieve or a strainer. I'm not sure what you call it in America, but if you've got pure water going through the strainer hardly is affected. But if you've got dirty water going through the strainer soon gets clogged up. So that can be a bit of an illustration to show that the liver's really being overloaded with the environmental poisons we're exposed to. And those environmental poisons are sometimes coming in the air we breathe. They're sometimes coming on our clothes, you know, what we're washing our clothes with, what our clothes are made of, but also our food. You know, it's almost like the invisible poison because you can't see it.
Right, yes.
And as I find with many illnesses, it's not just one thing.
Of course.
You know, it can be a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and over many years, there's a slow buildup.
Yes, and speaking of that, Dr. Otto Warburg, I'm not sure if you know about Dr. Warburg, but he actually...
I'm very familiar with him. I quote him in my book.
Yes, okay. Well, he once said, you can research the toxins from now until the cows come home, but the truth of the matter is, which I think relates to what goes on in the liver, is that we need oxygen in our bodies, and these things start compromising our processes in our bodies that are meant and are there to repair and to rebuild when given the optimal opportunity. In speaking about the liver and its health, tell us why the fiber, protein, and fats are considered the essential food groups and their importance in caring for and or detoxifying the liver.
Yes, I will answer that, but I'd just like to make one comment on Dr. Otto Warburg.
Yes.
What he said is absolutely right, and every single cell in the body must have oxygen, and if it has adequate oxygen, it gives 18 times more energy, and of course the liver is made up of liver cells. So I'm glad you mentioned that. But going over to food, fiber is an essential food group because it slowly releases the glucose, and that's very important, you know, comparing eating a 2-inch piece of sugar cane compared to eating the refined sugar. You know, it's huge because the fiber slowly releases the glucose, and every cell in the body requires a constant, regular, steady delivery of fuel, not dumped with a huge amount as in the refined does. But also in the fiber part of food, you'll often get a concentration of important nutrients like your vitamins and your minerals. So, you know, I try and eat the peel on most things. Obviously, I'm not eating the orange peel or the pineapple peel or the banana peel, but we find people today are peeling just about everything, you know?
Yes.
So as much as possible, keep your peels and keep that fiber. I've also read accounts of dentists that are saying that teeth and gums are deteriorating because they're not eating enough crunchy food. So fiber is also necessary for the sweeping of the colon. Now, if the colon is not working properly, that can be another source of toxic load to the liver, because when our colon is not evacuating regularly and the waste is building up and the fumes from the waste can also affect the body, which goes straight to the liver. So that's another toxic load on the liver. So there's your fiber. For protein, the DNA, its crossword bands are made up of amino acid. Our new cells are built up by amino acids, and amino acids is a breakdown from the protein that we eat. In his book, China Study, Dr. Colin Campbell, he shows the dramatic difference between animal protein and vegetarian protein, and how the animal protein is actually quite dirty burning fuel. So you're getting a much cleaner fuel when you have the vegetarian protein. Now, some people eat meat and they eat a small amount with a lot of vegetables, and it's certainly not a problem. In fact, sometimes they're healthier than vegetarians who are living on carbs.
Yes.
The superior protein is in your vegetarian protein. And as Sally Fallon shows in her book, Nourishing Traditions, if we prepare our legumes properly, they're not going to cause a problem, which means soaked, well rinsed, nice long cooking or pressure cooking. And so a lot of people are turned off legumes because it gives them wind. But if you prepare them properly, they're an excellent form of protein, as with your nuts and your seeds. 50% of the membrane around every cell in the body is protein. So those pieces of information I've just given show why the protein is essential. And your liver, it requires those amino acids to be able to repair. But if you've seen my lecture on the liver, you'll see me talk about the three phases of the liver detox. And when the liver is converting the fat-soluble toxin to the water-soluble toxin, it needs amino acids. Amino acids is what's required for that conversion. So protein's very important for the liver. And the third essential nutrient is fat. 50% of the membrane around every cell in the body is fat. And there's your liver. All those membranes around every single liver cell is 50% fat. It needs the fat to remain supple. But one of the liver's main roles is to make bile in the breakdown of fats. And the gallbladder is the reservoir of bile. And if a person's on a fat-free diet, the bile can actually stagnate a little bit. And if a person's on a high-fat diet, eating lots and lots of fried foods, that's also hard on the liver. So we need a balance. And unfortunately, humanity often uses one extreme to justify the other. So,
isn't that the truth? Yes. And speaking about fats, maybe just share for a moment about the good fats, because so many people have been turned off and they're eating low fat, or they're drinking low fat milk, or eating low fat this or that.
Yeah.
And it's just another example of the extremes that come out of theories or fads, isn't it?
That's true. That's true. I always say there's no need to reinvent the wheel. So we have, historically, we can look at several cultures. One is the South Pacific Islanders, who've enjoyed incredible health for centuries till the white man came and told them the coconut was going to kill them, which is an irony,
yes,
considering they were such healthy specimens eating coconut three times a day.
It could if you're camping underneath a coconut tree and it falls and hits you in the head, but any other way is fine.
That's right, that's right. So I think this is an affront to these people who've experienced such incredible health, you know, no diabetes, no heart disease, no cancer. Well, fairly rare, maybe it happened because of a serious injury, but they could have taught the white man how to eat, but they listened to the white man because the white man brought so many incredible reforms and rescued them from some very brutal spiritual practices they were part of, and certainly stopped them eating each other. But really, the islanders could have taught the white man many, many things. And in his book on coconut, Dr. Bruce Fyfe, he's written several books showing the wonders of the coconut. Oh, I really think he should be receiving a Nobel Prize for his expo on the amazing coconut oil. It's unfortunate that Ansel Keys in 1953 first put this theory forth that saturated fat causes heart disease. Dr. Malcolm Kendrick quoted in his book, The Great Cholesterol Con, he said, "I'm still waiting for the proof. There's actually no proof that this saturated fat causes heart disease." And when people were told to stop eating butter and start eating margarine, that has not reduced heart disease. In fact, it certainly increased cancer rates. So you see, we've got history that tells us a picture. And the Mediterranean diet, it's known to be an incredibly healthy diet, you know, of the people who've been eating olive oil for centuries. In his book, Fats That Heal, Fats That Kill, I think Udo Erasmus, he coins it very well. And his title tells you there are fats that are damaging, but they're also healing fats. And our brain is the fattiest organ in the body, and it suffers when we don't eat enough fat. I know in Australia, 1,700 cases of Alzheimer's are being diagnosed weekly.
Oh my gosh.
We've got a bit of a crisis there. And I think one of the contributing factors is this ridiculous, unscientific, fat-free, low-fat diet. We should be eating food in its whole state.
Yes, yes. And the salt kind of falls under that same category, doesn't it? Where they go, okay, no salt diet.
It certainly does.
Yeah.
You know, we're salty people. Our tears are salty. Our blood's salty. Our perspiration's salty. And the more we sweat, the more salt we need, and it needs to be replaced. But it needs to be replaced in the way that God made it, which was with 92 minerals. That's what's in seawater. And table salt has two minerals, so we've got a problem there.
Right.
And the problem is that all the minerals that buffer the harshness of sodium chloride, they've been taken out. So we need to get a balance and get the balanced salt or the whole salt, which is salts like Celtic salt, Himalayan salt.
Yes. Now, maybe I'm lumping too much together here, speaking about paleo and keto diets in the same sentence. Have you seen blatant problems with these diets long term? As something like these two diets come into vogue, sometimes they lose an original focus. And I'm wondering what you've seen, because I know you work with so many people.
Well, I was talking to a man one day, this is about 15 years ago. He was, I'm just converting my brain from kilos to pounds. He would have been 300 pounds. And I said to him, have you ever gone on a diet? He said, I went on the Atkins diet. I said, so how'd it go? He said, oh, I lost 17 kilos. I said, why'd you stop? He said, oh, so much stomach pain and constipation. I said, were you eating vegetables? He said, no. I said, did you read the book? He said, yes. I said, did you read the bit about how you're supposed to be eating 3 cups of vegetables a day? He said, does it say that? Maybe sounds like a small point, but it's everything. You see, Atkins knew that for people to eat that high-fat diet, they had to have that roughage. Otherwise, the colon stops because there's no fiber in meat.
Yes.
Maybe when a person's chewing on a steak, they think there is, but there isn't. And my point is, if done correctly, Atkins diet certainly got results. If people do it correctly, and I think this is where it gets a bad name, people just take on a little bit. But the China study certainly showed that the high meat, high fat diet can feed cancer cells. So I advocate, and we have found very effective at our retreat, is the plant-based keto diet. And Dr. Bruce Fyfe, he also talks, he calls it the coconut ketogenic diet. And he does use some meat, but what we advocate is get the carbohydrates down. Legumes do have carbohydrates, but not near as many as grain. And a lot of people don't realize that. And supplementing with the coconut oil to get that body into ketosis, because it's been proven for over 100 years in conquering epilepsy that ketones are neurohealers, they're neuroprotectives, and it can help to conquer epilepsy and neurological problems. So if done correctly, we have found it quite effective.
When you're working with people, do you use many supplements when the liver is overworked or not working very well at all? A lot of people recommend coffee enemas and also lots of supplementation. And I'm wondering how you work when you start with people and if you use supplements very much.
One thing to remember is the liver is a recoverable organ, and that's wonderful news. And I think God made it that way because he knew that so many people would beat up their livers.
Yes.
So when given the right conditions, the liver can revive. And there are some excellent herbs that are known to even unblock blockages in the liver. They give have a wonderful tonic effect on the liver. And this is milk thistle or St. Mary's thistle. And dandelion, another one is gentian, and the sweet bitter is ginger. Even though it is a little bit of a bitter, it has a sweet aftertone. And because they are so bitter, these herbs, it's not usually a pleasant tea. So we advocate capsules or tablets, which allows a higher dose of these herbs. And we've even had one lady who used to have a gallbladder attack, and we'd give her one of the tablets to suck on. And just the sucking of those bitter, bitter herbs in her mouth would trigger a release from her liver, gallbladder, and bring her relief. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting, yes.
You might have heard the old saying, sweet to the mouth, bitter to the stomach. I say, bitter to the mouth, sweet to the liver.
Certainly and sounds so
that,
like it.
That's one thing. But you mentioned coffee enemas. Coffee enemas have been used for centuries and have been used very successfully to help cleanse the liver. And Max Gerson, I think, and his daughter Charlotte Gerson, who carried on his work, they used to use coffee enemas quite extensively in their cancer programs. When the coffee is taken via the colon, it has a totally different effect to when it's taken via the mouth and into the stomach, and it is taken up very quickly by the portal vein straight to the liver and causes the liver to dump waste. And sometimes we use them if a guest requests, or sometimes we might advocate it, but a person's not interested, and if that's the case, we certainly don't push it. So at times we do use the coffee enema.
Yeah, that's the beauty, isn't it, about the body. If something doesn't feel right to somebody just through intuition or perhaps fear sometimes, there's always another route, isn't there?
There absolutely is. If there's one thing I've learned in my 40 years of teaching and helping in regards to health is you never be absolute.
Yes. And I also feel like there's no real truth to disease. You know, someone can smoke 3 packs a day for 70 years of their 100-year life and never get cancer or never get lung cancer. And yet someone else can just be secondhand smoke or something and their lungs are not very strong initially and they can come down with lung cancer. So in a sense, and this is something I wanted to ask you as well, with all your experience, I'm sure you've been able to unravel many medical mysteries. And I would venture to say than lots of Western doctors would. But I'm wondering, have you had unsolvable cases and what do you do? And certainly as good research improves yearly, life is not a given on some level. There's a lot more
that
behind the curtain.
True. We had a man attend our program who wanted to stop smoking and he was in his late 50s. You know, he had no health problems. He just wanted to stop because he knew it wasn't good. And I said, your mother must have done everything right and you've been born with a strong gene pool. And you know what this man did? He laughed a lot. Whereas, you're right, another person getting lung cancer at the age of 30. But there's always a reason. And this is something that always intrigues me. I like investigating.
Yes.
And when I investigate it, I do see the links. I'll give you one example. A friend of mine, his name's David. At the age of 62, he was getting breathless. They did an angiogram on him and they had to rush him in to do a few bypasses. This man is a vegetarian. He doesn't drink or smoke. He's a cyclist. He goes to Europe every year cycling for 200 Ks. How did he possibly get this? He came and did our program and I said, David, I'm intrigued. I want to investigate. And I discovered that as a young child, both of his parents smoked. And there are many chemicals in cigarette smoke.
Right.
And the passive smoke is more dangerous. So as a little boy, he's breathing in these chemical smoking fumes. And so damage began to happen in his arterial wall. So from a young child, he was starting to get buildup from his parents' passive smoke.
So what was your plan of attack, so to speak?
Well, then the next factor was he wanted to put on muscle. So he started to eat a lot of tuna. He was eating tuna every day, and after 6 months, he got mercury poisoning.
Right.
So that mercury was another factor that came in and damaged his arterial walls. I was very intrigued to see. So you can see people would look at him and say, how could he possibly? But when you looked at his history, you started to see, well, no wonder.
Right.
No wonder. But the plan of action for David was to go to the vegetarian protein and show him how to make lentils delicious, and also to take the cayenne pepper. The cayenne pepper strengthens the arterial wall.
Mm.
In his book, Curing with Cayenne, Sam Beiser, he even claims that it can rebuild heart muscles. That's quite incredible. So we looked at a plan to help him clear out the arteries, and he was able to come off his medication.
Wonderful. What do you see as the most misunderstood or dangerous idea or theory that's floating around these days?
Well, it's hard to put your finger on one because there are many, but I think dentistry comes in. I see so many people who've been damaged through root canal fillings. You know, the dentist said, oh, they're perfectly fine, but, oh, I've seen people with cancer from root canal fillings. See, a root canal filling is a dead tooth. And if you've got a dead tooth in your mouth, then the body builds up almost like a little abscess behind it to try and move it, and the person can't feel it. And I feel bad to just mention the teeth because there's so many areas. That's, sorry, Robin, that's a very hard question.
I've heard you mention in some of your talks about colon tea to help when you're not getting rid of what you need to. Is there a tea that you've made up and you sell it?
Yes, it is a tea we've made up. And that's another misconception, that going once a day to the toilet is normal. But Dr. Kellogg, very famous doctor who wrote many books on health, he said going once a day and eating three meals a day is constipation. We made up this tea, and I'll give you a very quick history of it. We had a girl come to our program who had constipation. This is 20 years ago. And she said, I just take this mix and it just gets me going. And I looked at the ingredients. And so what I did was I bought the ingredients and I played with the amounts. And we'd give it to the staff, the cleaning lady, the gardener. And the gardener came in one morning and he said, what was that? That was amazing. And that was the mix that we settled on. And that's the mix we've been using for 20 years.
Oh, wonderful.
And we find that it gently stimulates peristalsis and it retrains the colon to start going regularly.
Oh, beautiful.
If a person's chronically constipated, they might need to take the tea, you know, daily for a few months to retrain the colon.
Your career certainly spans making formulas and working with people and traveling literally the world and teaching. Like I know you're involved with right now this summer, you'll be coming to Loveland, Colorado, which I'm very excited to come and meet you there and listen to your lectures. Is there anything you would like to say? Is there a favorite part of your work?
Probably the most favorite part of my work is seeing people recover. Seeing people once again take control of their health, their life. That excites me. And while I have breath, I will still do this. Australia's blocked me, so I come to another country. That's my favorite part of my work, is seeing people freed from debilitating diseases. And that's why I teach the body can heal itself. Right. It just needs the right conditions. And I can show you what those conditions are.
Thank you to Barbara O'Neill for her work in the world and for sharing some of it with us today. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, or sign up for our programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Our podcasts as Tributaries Radio should be found where you like to listen. This is Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.